This podcast was recorded Thursday, July 23rd at 10:21 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like now that President Trump has placed a 50% tariff on hockey sticks made in Canada, Canada will impose a 50% tariff on Wilson footballs made in Ada, Ohio. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who muscle in on sports championship celebrations. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, if you love acronyms, you are going to love our Snollygoster of the Week award winner. But first, as the back-to-school shopping begins and families return from vacation, the 2026 campaign will really start to ramp up. With an open governor's seat and control of the U.S. Senate at stake, candidates running for a major office in Ohio this year are attracting lots of donations. In the race for U.S. Senate, Sherrod Brown has done a better job than John Houston when it comes to individual fundraising. Over the last few months, Brown has raised $14 million, more than triple John Houston's $4 million. In the race for governor, the candidates have raised pretty much close to the same amount of money. Vivek Ramaswamy got a head start, but Amy Acton has outraised him since January. To discuss the latest in the campaign, we turn to the WOSU Columbus on the Record panel. This week, it's reporter Jesse Balmert from the USA Today Ohio Network, Republican strategist Bob Clegg, and progressive activist Morgan Harper.
Bob, we'll start with you. Does the gap in fundraising, direct fundraising, between Sherrod Brown and John Houston, him Houston trailing, does that worry Republicans?
Well, I looked, Mike, to check that out. I went back to 2024. Sherrod raised about $97 million that year. And Bernie Moreno, his opponent, raised about $26 million. So it didn't make a difference. Then I looked at 2022 with J.D. Vance and Tim Ryan. Tim Ryan raised about $57 million, and J.D. Vance raised about $11 million. So that was 5-1. Brown was 4-1.
Is that because a lot of the money was going to outside groups instead of to the candidates directly in those years?
20, 30 years ago, that would have been a big gap that a candidate committee couldn't make up. But now we have all these outside groups. I tend to believe, though, in the U.S. Senate race, money means a little less because it's federalized. We have two candidates that are pretty well known. Governor's race, different story. Money's going to make a bigger difference there. We have two that have never held public office, and they each are going to not only have to define themselves, but they're also going to have to define their opponent.
Is it easier, Morgan, for Democrats to raise money this cycle? Donald Trump's in office. They just lost the White House. Democrats seem motivated in a lot of ways.
It does seem like there's a lot of energy amongst the base to participate. I mean, we're seeing it in some of these fundraising differentials. But, I mean, I agree with Bob and what you're all saying, that that's not going to be sufficient for a couple of reasons. One, because outside money, hello, Citizens United, like anything goes and can go. Elon Musk weighing in on this one. And then I think that's where it does become very important, especially for Democrats, to be super clear in our messaging. Take, for example, the data center issue. I mean, I think paying fair share for utility costs is a solid policy idea. Banning's better, you know? It's clearer. And I just think that we have to stay focused on the difference for us will be people turning out to vote and what are going to be the messages that most clearly motivate them to do that.
Should Ramaswamy, Jesse, be a little nervous? He got off to a big head start, got the nomination or the nod early from President Trump. Dave Yost, all the Republicans bowed out. He raised a lot of money early on, but it's sort of leveled off now. And Amy Acton has beaten him in the fundraising reports.
Yeah, I mean, I think Acton has been very competitive, especially for an unknown candidate. But Ramaswamy has the benefit of personal wealth and has already loaned the campaign $25 million and could certainly add to that as he is a billionaire. So we'll see. Also this week, Super PAC that is supporting his bid got donations from other billionaires, trillionaires like Elon Musk or Jeff Yoss, who's a school choice, private school voucher kind of proponent, has donated $20 million. So there's going to be a lot of money flying around in this race.
It's dangerous to try to get into Elon Musk's head, Bob, but yes. I found this.
I wouldn't try it.
I found
go
this.
Ahead.
I found this donation odd. Apparently, he and Ramaswamy kind of butted heads back when the early Doge, you know, the cutting thing, government spending cutting thing, and a $5 million to a trillionaire is really, it's not even pocket change.
Yeah,
it's like lint.
Yeah.
And Ramaswamy really doesn't need the money. He's got plenty of money.
Yeah.
Why? Why did he give?
I think he wants to send a message that he is supportive of, you know, free market, especially with what where the Democrats are going these days with this socialist thing. I think, you know, Musk sees that we got to protect capitalism here in the United States. And how do you do that? By electing the right people. And I think he's just trying to make a statement with that.
Acton's campaign's already out with a social media meme saying that, you know, a trillionaire is giving to a billionaire. Could this help her in her message that billionaires out of touch? That's what she's trying to label Ramaswamy as.
I think that is an angle. I mean, there certainly are weaknesses with Elon Musk. We don't have to imagine that. A lot of people are not happy with what he was doing in the administration. People are not happy with a lot of what he's doing in, you know, some of his companies. But I also think that it's going to be important for her to really focus in on this corruption message. It's not just that he's wealthy, it's that he's also corrupt, and it's an extension of what we're seeing in Washington. And it does seem like through polling that a lot of people of all ideological backgrounds are not happy with how much corruption is happening.
So you raise the money, Jesse, and then you got to spend it. Ramaswamy spent a lot of money on ads in the past, you know, 4 or 5 months. The PAC supporting him have spent a lot of negative ads attacking Amy Acton. Amy Acton really hasn't spent any of the money she's raised yet, at least not on TV.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. It'll be interesting when Amy Acton decides to start spending a substantial amount of money, which she'll need to, on advertisements, and whether that's defining herself or defining Ramaswamy. I know the campaign in general has been looking at a lot of Ramaswamy's quotes from his presidential bid and so forth, so I would expect those to show up in ads going forward.
Bob, this is your business, placing ads.
Yeah.
Where do you place ads these days? I mean, you watch the World Cup, they're there.
Yeah.
You watch sports, they're there.
Yeah.
Jeopardy, they're there.
Yeah.
On TV.
Wheel of Fortune, always.
But is TV, is it as expensive for campaigns now to?
Oh, yeah.
Because you're not putting as much on TV?
No. Well, you got to pick the right things on TV. Yeah. Sports, big on broadcast. Broadcast is held up, but it's sports. It's special events. It's not buying, you know, comedy prime time or anything like that. You got to do streaming. Have to do streaming. So many people are, you know, not on cable. They're not watching broadcasts. They're streaming, whether it's, you know, Netflix or Paramount or whatever. So, I mean, that's where the money's got to be spent now. You just got to spend more of it in a lot of different places.
All right. We'll be seeing them, no doubt. On our phones, on our TVs. In our sleep. Anyway, Vivek Ramaswamy this week laid out some tax cut priorities as he picked up the endorsement of the Ohio Chamber of Commerce. Ramaswamy promised to eventually eliminate Ohio's income tax, and he vowed to more immediately eliminate Ohio's tax on capital gains. Combined, those taxes bring in about $10.5 billion a year, which is about a third of the revenue Ohio needs each year to balance its budget. Amy Acton promises tax credits for low and moderate income Ohioans. She also promises a child tax credit. Her plans could cost up to $1 billion. Neither candidate has offered any specifics, really, on how they would pay for their proposals. Jesse Baum, first to the capital gains elimination. Not really a surprise. What's Vivek Ramaswamy's reasoning for doing away with that tax?
Yeah, so this is a tax that you pay on stocks and like kind of other large purchases. It largely would benefit the wealthiest Ohioans in the state because those are people who tend to have those types of investments. And his pitch is that if you keep these people happy, that they're going to bring the jobs to Ohio and they're going to like invest in the state and not take their businesses elsewhere. So capital gains is something that he would like to eliminate income taxes on in his first budget. And then on the income tax generally, would like to phase that out over 8 to 10 years, which is kind of in line with what Ohio Republicans have been doing anyway.
So we would join South Dakota and Wyoming in doing away with our capital gains tax. So we're going to steal jobs from South Dakota and Wyoming, Bob?
Well, we'll probably steal a lot of millionaires and billionaires from Wyoming because they're all in Jackson Hole. But, I mean, we can see, look at the state of New York. Their tax policy is causing all these wealthy individuals to flee the state. And what does that mean? That means your tax revenue goes down. So we can't afford that here in Ohio. So I'd like to keep the money here. Also, you know, there have been studies done that capital gains cuts will lead to more growth because they take that money and they spend it or invest it in their business. Because most of these guys, or a lot of these guys, are businessmen. And they just take this, the profit off of that, and just put it back into the company, which means more jobs.
Morgan, this is a very simple message. I'm going to eliminate the income tax. I'm going to eliminate the capital gains tax. Amy Acton's much more nuanced. It's hard to explain how her tax cuts are going to benefit the average Ohioan.
Yeah, I mean, I think being more clear in the attack of the weaknesses, what actually Vivek Ramaswamy's ideas are leading to, it is, again, this theme of billionaire takeover of Ohio. And just, you know, picking up on something Bob said, people leaving New York, I don't know. There was just a story this morning on your radio station about how AI companies are trying to rush to New York. Why? Talent. How in the heck are we going to have people who can fill jobs in this state if they are not being well educated? And how do you do that without tax revenue? I really wonder. So, you know, being able to like take it right back to Vivek, I think is going to be really clear to highlight the impacts of the policies that he's making so it doesn't just become a policy back and forth.
Well, I think the problem we get when we start talking about this is that we can talk about capital gains, we can talk about tax credits, but it's personal property tax that's really the tax that's going to matter in this race. And I don't think either, both candidates want to lower them, but they don't say how they're going to lower them. They don't say where the money's going to come from to make up for the lost revenue to local government and schools and everybody else. That's going to be the real sticking point in this campaign. And then which candidate is able to address that issue more clearly and with ideas of how they're going to fund it is going to be the one that's going to come out ahead on the tax issue.
The only way to fund that, Jesse, is to raise some other taxes. I mean, especially the property tax. If you wanted to eliminate it, which I don't think we're talking about it anymore, but if you want to eliminate it, it's $24 billion. I mean, that's a lot of money. You're going to have to raise taxes, sales tax or some other kind of tax down the road.
I mean, certainly when folks were talking about eliminating property tax entirely, that was Governor Mike DeWine's message that we're going to have to increase sales tax astronomically or increase income tax in order to fill this hole. And so Ramaswamy is talking about taking it back to levels at the end of the COVID-19 pandemic, which, again, that lacks a lot of detail. And then Amy Acton is talking about homestead exemptions, which could benefit some of the most needy people, but certainly it's not like a widespread solution for property tax concerns. So you're right. There's been a lot more focus on income tax than property tax, even though that's what Ohioans have largely been complaining about.
And Morgan, Ramaswamy wants to eliminate the state income tax, which is what, 2.75% now, and the capital gains tax. But that's not the only tax that Ohioans pay. Bob mentioned property taxes, there's city income taxes, there's Metro Park levies, there's Columbus State now wants to put a levy to help pay for free tuition. It's so complicated. Tax cuts really don't tangibly affect a lot of people when it come right down to it.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I do think it's going to be important to avoid this taxation tit for tat. I don't know that that's going to come out in our favor, and I think it's probably a better route to consider some of the proactive policies that are easier also for the public to understand, to really wrap their heads around. And you know, and we've seen this in other races around the country. I mean, plan for health care, child care. There are a lot of things that go into creating a solid life for people in our state. And those are also easier for people to understand.
The messaging on property taxes is, because that's a really big hit.
Oh, yeah.
Especially for folks who have already paid off their mortgage, and yeah, they get that bill directly every year. I mean, income tax is 2.75%. You withdraw it, you really don't see it until you go to file your taxes at the end of the year, you see it. But property taxes hit you in the face every year.
And senior citizens are usually the ones that get hit the hardest with it because they're on a fixed income and they usually own their home and live in their home. So, you know, we may have to, you know, there still is a ballot initiative out there that could,
go
on the ballot that would completely erase property taxes of any kind. And I think, you know, each of the candidates should be asked, if Ohio does away with property taxes, what is your plan to try to make up that money?
It's not a bad question. The property tax abolishment campaign is still active. perhaps collecting signatures, the question could be on next year's ballot. I doubt candidates will want to give specifics because when you eliminate $24 billion a year in mainly local taxes, taxes that pay for schools, police officers, and firefighters, the alternatives will make people mad, whatever the alternatives are. My thanks to the Columbus on the Record panel, Republican strategist Bob Clegg, progressive activist Morgan Harper, and State House reporter Jesse Balmert of the USA Today Ohio Network. We'll be right back.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.
Coming up, our Snollygoster of the Week segment. But first, a favor. If you like what you hear, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you are hearing us. And don't forget to tap the follow button so you get to see every episode as it appears, get to hear every episode as it appears on your phone or whatever device you're using. It is time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. It has been a rough couple weeks for Ontario and the northeastern quarter of the United States. Canadian wildfires have grown to nearly 2 million acres, and the smoke from the fires has spread across the Midwest and toward the Northeast. Ohio and many other states have issued unhealthy air warnings about the smoky haze. Bernie Marino, channeling the famous South Park anthem, blames Canada. He has released a bill that would sanction Canada for failing to contain the fires and for polluting American skies. The name of his bill, the Countering Atmospheric Nuisance Arising from Drifting Airborne Foreign Incendiary Residual Emissions Act, or the Canada Fire Act, would sanction Canadian officials and would label the Canadian ambassador as a persona non grata until the smoke clears. Persona non grata, them's fighting words in Latin. Now, the smoke has been bad, especially for people with breathing issues. I have friends in the boundary waters of Minnesota who have had to evacuate because of the fires. It is not good. But for filing headline-grabbing legislation with a ridiculously long acronym, Senator Bernie Marino gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. Experts say because of climate change, these frequent fires north and south of the U.S.-Canadian border are here to stay, so maybe we'll get an even longer acronym next time. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. We are a part of the NPR network. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.